Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you.
Solid waste. Peace. Process.
The world is very different now.
Solid waste. Peace.
To remind process. America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Hold
now.
Jeremy back. Hold me back.
Now.
Hold me back.
Now.
That'll be my new line.
Hold me back.
Catchphrase.
Okay. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process. This is episode 21. Today is March 1st, 2012. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
And this is Rob.
And we are changing things up a little bit this episode. We're going to go with a shorter episode, but we're going to try to focus on a single topic and try to do that justice. And something that we were discussing earlier this week was, I'll let Rob tell you what it is.
Yeah, our old contributor Ken mentioned a good story about kids in a public school and talking about the government. Just this was like elementary school age. They were talking about what you would want to do if you were president. And of course, all the kids say things like they want to help people or world peace or cure hunger throughout the world or close Guantanamo. They said all sorts of things. You know, I don't know if that was in there.
No, I don't think.
Good answer, Barry. And questioning whether that was an example of liberal government indoctrination or not liberal but public school indoctrination of a pro government philosophy. And I found that interesting. I don't know if it's that or just, you know, a simple kind of sweet, naive idea that we have a nation together and we have leaders at the top of the nation that are helping us all be better or something. Or is it teachers that are all part of unions and funded by the Department of Education pushing pro-government agenda on the children? They are our future.
Yes.
Yes. Do they just not know it? I don't remember Miss Underwood in first grade being like, ha ha, you know, like Mr. Burns with the fingers in a cage. Yes, yes. Indoctrinate the children.
I think it's an unwillingness to tell the children anything negative. They paint this pretty picture and sugarcoat things, and I think that's getting worse than ever before. But they don't tell them. Well, the president also has to authorize airstrikes that are going to wipe out an entire village. What do you think about that, kids?
Yeah, right. Yeah, right. I think it is. I think it's an attempt to, you know, oversimplify things and say, hey, look, this is the way it's supposed to work. This is, you know, the ideal implementation, but this isn't actually how it, you know, where rubber meets the road. This is not how it works. So it's all very Schoolhouse Rock, you know, this, I'm a bill, this is how I become a law, but, you know.
This is how I become the law that violates your rights.
But, yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
But what should it be? Like, should it be like Schoolhouse Rock and like the school, the, you know, the song gets started and then, you know, Debbie Downer comes in there and says, is this really constitutional, this bill?
Yeah, there should be a Schoolhouse Rock song about gridlock. You know?
Right.
Actually, I think Jimmy Kimmel did something like that. I'll have to look that up, put it in the show notes. They did some sort of parody of that, you know, how a bill becomes a law.
Yeah, I think I am indoctrinated because I remember as a kid, I really did have this kind of sunshiny view of things. You know, there's problems, and then we elect people to help solve those problems. And it's a nice way to think.
It is, but it's not reality. So,
and I do think we simplify everything. Like, I still don't understand the whole Columbus 1492 thought the boat was going to fall off the flat Earth thing. Like the Greeks knew the Earth wasn't flat. You look at the little ship when it sails out and the mast goes down. What is it, just on its way down the flat Earth? You know, So that's, but why is that? And that's not taught as like a poem or legend. I mean, that's taught as like world history.
Yeah.
Why? Why do we do that?
That's a good question. And, you know, we can go off on that tangent of
everything
that's wrong with schools, but I think we've covered that quite a bit in the past.
But it's interesting why that even shows up, or why that, maybe it's an underestimation of what kids can really handle.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think part of it too is that, you know, it's become the standard curriculum, so, you know, they have to teach it.
Right.
You know, they're not allowed to deviate from it, even though some of it's just flat out wrong. You know, Columbus didn't think the Earth was flat. He thought the Earth was a lot smaller than it is.
Silly guy.
But, yeah, it's all of that. It's not giving the kids enough credit that, you know, they would be able to understand the more complicated issues. And I'm not saying that, you know, you should be teaching fourth graders about filibustering and, you know, all of the other backroom deals and stuff that goes on in Washington.
Come on, that's going on in the playground anyway. You got to get the kids in early on that stuff.
I think kids need to be taught those things at some age, but maybe that's too young. I don't know. We have just now started, you know, teaching my 6-year-old about, you know, civil government, and I think, you know, he's able to grasp everything we've given him so far, but we haven't gotten into all the, you know, how the sausage is made.
Right. Yeah. I don't see an evil plan, but it is an interesting idea.
So how are you going about that in a different way? Are you?
Well, part of our curriculum right now is watching CNN's student news thing that they produce every day. It's like it's 5 minutes or something on, you know, stories that they think, that their editors think would have some interest to younger kids. And so, you know, they don't sugarcoat it. They cover all the same stories that you'd see in a regular newscast. You know, like they've been covering the Republican primaries. So, you know, my son knows that Mitt Romney and Ron Paul are running against each other, trying to, you know, get the nomination. He doesn't know anything about who they are or what they stand for, but he knows the names.
Well, yeah. He's ready to vote then.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he's fully qualified to vote. I wouldn't say it's an evil conspiracy, but I think it's a conspiracy. I think it's, you know, it is a government-controlled ecosystem for the most part, and the government is certainly not going to promote the teaching of views that would cast it in any sort of negative light.
Right. What about these children's books? Do you ever read children's books and go like, man, they're really pushing it hard here?
Like Dr. Seuss?
Dr. Seuss can hit bang that drum. Sometimes I feel like there's you could perceive some kind of agenda in some of those. And I like to think what the opposite version of the children's book would be. You know, maybe we need we can get rich starting like a conservative children's book group. I could do that. You know, we got all the lessons about sharing. You know, here's Jimmy and he's sharing his lemonade with Johnny. And
yeah,
you know, why doesn't Jimmy sell that lemonade if he's got it? You know, why is he sharing it? He could make a profit on that and sell it to 2 more people. Right? Like free market kids books.
Like Jack and Jill went up the hill, but Jill's pail was larger than Jack's, so she shouldn't have to share any of her water with Jack or something like that.
That's right. That's right.
They weren't allowed to come back down the hill until a federal inspector had hit their water.
Tested it.
Yeah. You know, fecal coliform bacteria or...
You need an expert for that.
I don't have any children, so my exposure to children's books is limited. And when I was younger, I didn't pick up on symbolism very well. I think I've only developed that in the last 10 years or so. 10 or 15 years, maybe. But I've said before, children's movies, it's certainly in there. And A Bug's Life, that one has some liberal versus conservative themes in it. You know, I think that was the movie where, or maybe it was Ants. I don't remember. Those two movies were pretty similar, but one being the savers who prepare for winter, and then the other ones come and steal the food, and they were lazy, you know, and then they just stole. And then WALL-E being the major, hey, look, you fatties ruined Earth, and now you're off in the spaceship riding around your hover chair, not interacting with each other. And that one, I think that one was the most blatant and in your face of any of the movies I ever saw.
There is a fairly strong message there, I'll give you that.
I still liked WALL-E.
I did too. And you know what's really interesting about WALL-E is it's like it's Idiocracy for kids.
Yeah.
Yeah, that does make sense.
It's almost a scene-for-scene lift from Idiocracy if you watch it. It's just, you know, because, I mean, they even have, like, the big box store, right?
Yeah.
That scene in Idiocracy where they're walking through, you know, they're at, like, aisle 700 or whatever in this gigantic Sam's discount warehouse kind of thing.
I still haven't seen Idiocracy, so I don't
know. Oh, yeah. Gotta watch that. That's a great movie.
All right, I'll put it on my list.
I'll be honest about, you know, Dr. Seuss in particular. I didn't read his books as a kid, so I wasn't familiar with them until we started reading them to our kids. But you know, he delves into some pretty serious subject matter in those books, and you know, obviously,
give me an example, because I don't know.
Well, I mean, certainly The Lorax is about protecting the environment.
Okay.
And the Sneetches, I don't know if you've ever read the
No.
Sneetches. The Sneetches is about racism.
Okay.
About, you know, two variations of Sneetches, one that have stars on their bellies and ones that don't, and how they just kind of, you know, shun one another. And it's either racism or it's, you know, class warfare, depending on how you want to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite, and one I had never heard of as a kid, was Yertle the Turtle.
I don't know that one either. If it's not Green Eggs and Ham, I probably don't know it.
Rob, do you know that one?
I know. I've heard of it. I don't think I've ever read it.
You should read it.
Is it a long one? I don't like long books.
Says the man who's read Jest.
Like, that's right.
12 times.
Yeah, I only read one long book. Over
what about
over.
Wide books? Do you read wide books?
Yeah, you'll see when the kids come, Jeremy, that sometimes when the kid brings the book at nighttime and it's like, we've got a lot of words, like, oh, you know, not that one. See if you can, I'm still, my daughter's still at the age I can skip a page or two and she's not quite sure. Definitely pull that trick.
And the end. All right.
Right.
It's bedtime.
You skip a page, or if it's got a lot of words, you're like, look, there's a duck. That's a funny duck. Next page.
Okay, so one more thing I wanted to say about Dr. Seuss, and if you have not read this one, Rob, you definitely need to read Fidwick the Big-Hearted Moose.
I have not.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to read that just on the title alone.
Go get that one from the library, because That book was written for you.
So what was his, what, yeah, go into his positions, or what he was, do you,
well,
what do you think about that? Is it, okay, they're there and it's okay, or they're there and that's not okay, or?
I think, I certainly find myself agreeing with Dr. Seuss's politics more than I disagree with him. And I think the, you know, in the Big Hearted Moose story, he talks about, I mean, he doesn't talk about it, but it's obvious that he's describing socialism and all of the, you know, all the things that are wrong with it. And, you know, Yertle the Turtle is a story about, I don't know, I guess a dictator and why that is, you know, evil. So, I don't know. They're just, you know, surprisingly adult themes in these books. But, you know, they're written at a level where a kid can relate to it and certainly understand the concepts. So,
I had lunch with Ken today, and this came up in sort of a different, I don't know what the word is. Different context, but we were talking about the Looney Tunes cartoons, and the one specifically with the stork who brings Bugs Bunny to the gorillas because he's drunk. And say nowadays you can have a drunk character on a kid's cartoon, but back in the day it's hilarious. It's a classic cartoon and it was great, and there shouldn't be anything wrong with that.
Now, Jeremy, you're promoting drug use.
You're just saying kids are getting soft.
I am saying, well, I think adults are soft, and therefore they're passing it on to the kids. But those, there's, I watched all those cartoons, and look how awesome I turned out.
And yeah, Aristocats has a drunk duck as well.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Remember the drunk duck? That's right.
I think that was more socially acceptable then. So,
yeah, I like this idea of kind of a conservative authorship. I could see that taking off. You know, there's those little things that come out at election time. You know, like here's why mommy's a Republican. There's some book like that,
right?
But yeah, I think like just some nice free market initiatives, you know, not much sharing, certainly no pooling of resources. It's good lessons for the kids.
Wow.
Yeah. Wouldn't have expected you to say that, Rob.
Hey, if it's going to make me some money, I'm down with that. I just don't want your anarchist no copyright laws to take it from me. I want to create this whole book and you're just going to photocopy it.
So hang on, you're not serious, right? Obviously, you're joking, Rob.
I think it would be a good money-making scheme. I'm down with that. I'll sell my principles for money. I mean, geez. Who do you think I am here?
All right, well, Steve honest.
Oh, man.
But yeah, sometimes I try to read some of the liberal ones. All right, I just try to... I play Drudge Report or Andrew Breitbart, God rest his soul. I play the role and I just pick any book and I try to put a liberal agenda on it. That's kind of fun, you know. Play the part of a right wing media outrage hawk.
Yeah,
like this one, the one I really like is this. Have you read the Chicka Chicka Boom Boom?
Yeah.
Very good one. It's not very long, Jeremy. I think you can handle it.
Right.
First, one thing, I got the Wikipedia page up here. One thing I completely don't get is like the things like 8 pages long, and it's got two authors and an illustrator. Like why do you really need two people to write that book? They're like Chicka Chicka, what do we do next? Like boom, how about boom bang? No, let's keep brainstorming this, you know. I can picture two of those guys like like endlessly struggling over their over their 12 words in this book. Yeah, come on, guys. Man up, Bill and John.
See, adults are getting soft.
That's right.
Writing an 8-page book on their own.
That's right. I understand if you can't draw, like that's totally cool. You can get an illustrator. That makes sense. But come on.
So for our listeners that aren't familiar with it, what is Chicka Chicka Boom Boom about?
Oh, I don't have it here. I wish I did. I'm sure somewhere. But it starts like A told B and B told C. I'll meet you at the. This is like story time. This is MPP story time. I'll meet you at the top of the coconut tree. We said D to E, F, G. I'll beat you to the top of the coconut tree. Chicka, chicka, boom, boom. Will there be enough room? Look who's coming. L-M-N-O-P.
Yeah.
And Q-R-S and T-U-V and still more W and X-Y-Z. All on their way up the, oh, no, chicka, chicka, boom, boom.
Right.
I actually knew them all by heart.
Yeah. And
the audiobook
will collapses out. And all right. The letters fall out. Right.
You know what that's a story about. Immigration. A and B are fine, C's fine, tree's fine, everything's fine. Oh, here comes D and E. You start letting some vowels in, look what happens.
Yeah. Well, it's either immigration or it's overpopulation of the planet, right?
Right. Yeah. And the letters aren't organized, they're falling all over themselves.
Yeah.
Destroying the environmental coconut tree. See, I think that one might be our flagship book in our conservative children's book.
Yeah.
And there'll be like a little, like some worksheets you can do at the end.
Worksheets.
Instead of a tree, maybe you could make it a border fence.
Right. And they all fall over, you know. And then at the end, you could pick which letter really caused it. You know, it was all fine until P came.
Yeah. And then pass some legislation that limits the number of letters beyond P that could climb the tree.
That's right. I think we're on to something here. You know, now I got to hand it to these two guys who wrote this book that I memorized, you know? Maybe they're really showing me something.
Brainstorming helps. Well, now our listeners are just going to steal this great idea. We already blew it.
That's right. True.
We told them they can steal anything they hear online. And...
Oh, there it is. I can download it on the Kindle already. Too late.
Oh.
So let me circle back here to our original topic of the indoctrination in school because, that started with, I don't know if it was an actual story or if this was just some thought experiment of a teacher asking her class, what would you do if you were president? Do you know, Rob, was this a real thing? Or
I think it was a real thing.
Okay.
I don't know how, you know, it sounds plausible. I mean, it just sounds like something that happens.
Yeah.
I don't think it's, you know, right.
But I just, one of the responses in that thing was that, you know, they would give everybody money if they were president. That was one of the kids.
Oh, right.
Was, you know, give everybody money, give everybody a flat screen TV or.
Yes. Got my vote.
Yeah. And, you know, you have to wonder then, okay, did the teacher, you know, go anywhere with that? Or was it just everybody kind of got a good chuckle out of it and then we moved on to the next activity? Or, you know, did they use the opportunity? Was it a teachable moment, you know?
Oh,
hey, you know what?
Gosh.
That is not the role of government.
I guarantee you the teacher did not say that.
Yeah, I'm pretty certain that didn't happen either. But it should have. It should have, you know. It's school. You're supposed to be educating the kids. And if you really want to educate them, you should say, yes, the government does give certain people money, but they don't have the authority to do that. And, you know, that is not the function of government. That is not, you know, that's not right. So what you need to do is grow up and fix this mess that your great-great-grandparents left you with.
And beat up that kid over there who gets the free lunches.
That's right. That's right. Now let's watch this cartoon duck all drunk.
Now let's talk about food stamps.
I like it.
All right.
That's all I got.
Well, yeah. So I was thinking about food stamps because that was the other thing we were talking about earlier this week. Look,
just one last thing. I just found a link. I'm trying to run through the article real quick, but it's from the Independent, some southwestern Minnesota daily newspaper. It's called, the article is called President for a Day, and it's a second graders outline what they'd do if they led the United States. And the article is dated about a month ago. So if this is it, I'll post it, or I'll send you the link, Jerry, or something.
So the other thing that we were talking about earlier this week, and I don't have it in front of me, so I can't read it verbatim. But it had to do with the Department of Agriculture. I don't know, were they bragging about how many people they had on food stamps?
They weren't bragging. Let's start this off and explain it the right way so we don't get a bunch of people saying, well, this is not factually accurate and that's not. It was a joke that somebody sent me where the Department of Agriculture is proudly giving away or supplying food stamps to the greatest number of people in history.
Okay.
And then under that it said the Park Department, a division of the Department of Agriculture, has signs up that say don't feed the animals because they will become dependent and unable to fend for themselves.
Right.
It was,
we should point out that that's not factually accurate.
Right, right.
That the parks, you know.
Pretty sure that's the Department of the Interior.
Right, that's not a part of the Department of Agriculture.
Yeah, that's the biggest problem with that joke.
Which department sure it is. Now, the biggest problem with that joke is that the greatest number of people are on food stamps now.
Yeah.
That's for a number of reasons.
I don't know. It got me thinking about food stamps, and you know, my thought process was that the government gives these food stamps to a select few. I mean, relatively speaking, a select few of the population, even though food is a necessity for life, right? So why don't they just give food stamps to everybody? You know, why isn't that universal, like they want to do healthcare?
Or like Social Security, that everybody gets a little cut.
Yeah.
Like government cheese is just like hanging out. Do they still have government cheese?
I don't know.
No, I don't. Well, I shouldn't say no, but I, you know, now they have that WIC program, women, infants, and children.
Right.
For people they consider at risk for not eating healthy or something like that.
Right.
But that is, they have a list of certain things that qualify, and it's, you can go to any supermarket and get, you know, different brands. So it's not, you don't have to get some government brand or the generic brand.
See, it's just like the Obama healthcare plan, right? You get a little government subsidy, but it's all through the free market. It's perfect.
But, well, no,
but,
because that's still to a select group. I don't know what you have to do to qualify for that. But I watched a little training video when I was a cashier at Deerberg's saying, you know, you are not to judge these people. There is nothing wrong with
they really
treat them like any other customer, blah, blah, blah.
And yet you're expected to enforce the rules, like the restrictions on what they can buy with food stamps, right? I mean,
yes,
like they can't buy alcohol. They can't buy lottery tickets. There's a list of things that you can't use food stamps for.
Yeah, and but it's easier now with the computerized, you know, barcodes, UPCs now.
Yeah, well,
but still, you do have to say, well, I'm sorry, this didn't qualify, and then they times when they get a little upset or they got a little upset about that. But,
I don't understand that either, though. I mean, if you're resigned to giving them money for food, then what? You give them the money, and you know. that's it. You're done. Why do you care how they spend the money?
Well, I think we should care, though.
I think we should care.
Why? What difference does it make you spend it on?
Because hopefully you're buying something, you know, that you need to have some sustainment.
Well, okay, you know. But what if they don't? Who is harmed by that?
I don't know.
Theoretically, they are.
Right.
They're going to buy alcohol instead of food, but then I think the original plan behind welfare was to help people get back on their feet so they could become self-sustaining.
Right.
And hence the rules for you need to use this for something productive that's going to help you along your path to recovery.
Okay. Well, so
right.
But it, like any other government program, it grew way beyond any manageable means or bounds, and we have what we have today.
From what little I know, we should probably know a lot more, have a lot more firsthand experience with the program. But I think it does do really good things, and I think it's definitely required as the world is now. But the it seems like you could always use more, and I think people sometimes get caught in like this sort of whirlpool effect where with the welfare you can kind of get some stability and use that to get a job, and then you get the job and you're off the welfare is working, you're doing it right, you know, everything bops along for 3 months and a kid gets sick and you have no one to take care of the kid, so you got to like take off work, you don't have the vacation, I lost the job, back on the welfare. You know, it's just that kind of cycle. You get kind of up and down sort of situation is, I think, a pretty common thing for those people in that range that really do dip down and need that assistance to get back up. You know, I think I think you're going to have, you know, there's the whole spectrum in there, but in the middle there for those people, I think that's a pretty common experience.
All right. I don't know that I guess I'm not really exposed to it anymore. Not working in the supermarket.
Right.
One thing I'll bring up, and then we probably should circle back to Jerry's initial question of why isn't food provided to everybody like healthcare is going to be, they're trying to do. But they recently passed or tried to pass a bill where you could not use the debit cards, the food stamp debit cards in strip clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And there was pushback, one of the reps saying, well, what if an ATM at a strip club is the closest one to this person's house? You know, you're discriminating against people who live in a place where they don't have access to an ATM that's at a gas station or at a bank or something else. And
I've gone in for that reason myself.
Yeah, you know, I'm just here to use the ATM really quick. And can I get it all in singles, please?
That's plausible.
Sure.
So I think that's why we should care. And you know, care where or how the money is being spent. I think there should be accountability. And there should be, I don't know if time limits is the right word, but there should be some milestones, maybe.
But
there are, aren't there?
Take this to the logical extreme. Let's say we do limit what they can spend it on, and now somebody's violated those rules. What do you do at that point? Do you take the money away from them and say, well, sorry, you blew it. I guess you're just going to starve to death now because you don't know how to spend the money right.
Maybe. But then they end up...
Then, I mean...
where do they end up? Yeah. Well, you certainly don't give them more money. They're like a defense contractor then.
Okay, so...
you've proven that you can screw this up beyond any... manageable means, but here's some more money to fix it.
Right. I agree. So the only other thing you can do is further regulate how the money is spent. You know, you either go out and purchase the food for them and deliver it, or warehouse it somewhere where they can come pick the food up, right? Or you have to have somebody accompany them to the store while they spend the money to make sure that they don't, you know, spend it on things they're not supposed to. So you're just, you know, you're making the system more complicated, more costly, all of that, just to enforce this one restriction. And to me, that is, you know, that's kind of the MO of government in virtually everything that they try to make better.
That it becomes unmanageable.
Yeah, well, it's the unintended consequences.
But your contention that somebody's like the cashier has to monitor what they're buying, it used to break it out what they could spend. Like there would be two totals presented. Okay, here's your food stamp total.
Right.
And then this was all the extra stuff and you have to pay cash or you have to use a credit card or something else for this.
Okay. But right. So why should a grocery store have to become a government agent? You know, why do we need to deputize our clerks at grocery stores in order to enforce this?
It's free market.
Well, they're already a government agent collecting taxes.
What?
Sales tax. They have to collect sales tax, so
yeah.
We've already deputized them.
Yeah.
Ha! Bang!
Ooh, that's a good one. Bang, he's on it.
It's good. And it just further illustrates my point. That the government can't do this by itself, so it has to drag everybody else into it in order to make it work. Because people aren't going to pay the taxes voluntarily.
Okay. I don't know. I guess I don't have a good comment or anything for that. I don't mean a rebuttal either. I don't know where I stand on how the government is allowed to be the puppeteer and make people do its bidding. Or
you don't know where you stand on that?
I'm not going to just say, no, the government has no business doing that. I don't know. I haven't thought it through enough. That's knee-jerk reaction is, yeah, the government shouldn't be doing that. But I don't know that I can say that with any measure of intelligence.
Okay.
It's an interesting thing that I just never thought about before. And I was thinking, well, why do they do it? Well, you know, I'm sure the supermarket's all about it. You know, they're going to want
whoever they can. It's sales for them.
Right, right.
Well, obviously, they have an incentive to not enforce the restrictions, right?
Why?
Why?
Well, if you sell alcohol, you make a lot more profit on alcohol than you do on other other food items.
Right. But I don't think it's worth getting caught, but it's certainly worth supporting the program and doing the government's bidding, because you're going to get those customers in there, and they're not just going to be buying on the food stamps. Like Jeremy, when you were a cashier, I mean, how many people just had food stamp purchases?
It was where I worked, it wasn't a lot. I mean, it wasn't even once a shift that I ran across that.
Right, right.
But it was enough that I remember it. And I remember the transition from the actual paper, little paper.
Yeah.
You know, essentially paper money, dollar type looking things that they would tear out of the book and give me.
Right.
Or to the transition to the, like they called them EBT. It was
right.
Electronic something, electronic balance transfer or something. It was just a debit card for food stamps is all it was.
Cool. But, how did you remember all the numbers of the produce?
Practice, man. You see it enough. Bananas, 40-11.
I'm down with that, but like, was it awful when you started? You know, was it like, oh, bananas, you know, it starts with B, and you know, and then, oh, grapes. You know, looking up every one? Or did you hit some flashcards before work or what?
No, they didn't give me a little booklet to take home. Maybe they should have. That would have helped. But it was a little bit tedious at first because you have to flip through. And that's why the first, for a while, they have a little sign up that says cashier in training. So people know, oh, this is going to take all freaking day to go through. And I'm standing there and I see somebody roll up with a cart full of produce. I'm like, oh, crap.
It's going to be a toughie.
Yeah. Especially if it's some crotchety old person.
So, can you like ID a kohlrabi from a parts of palm?
I'm a little rusty now. I can spot some rhubarb.
Nice.
All right. On that happy note, we are always looking for good music for including on our shows. So, are you in a band? Do you know someone who is looking to promote their music? We'd love to feature them on the show. Send us a note, feedback@midwestpeaceprocess.com, or you can drop us a link on our Facebook page, facebook.com/midwestpeace. And please give us your comments. We'd love to hear from you on this episode or any previous episode, anything you've heard us say or pontificate on. I think that's all we got for this episode. We will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye now.
More bacon than the pan can handle. 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 Utility man, pourquoi? Utility man.